The late 19th century and early 20th century was no easy time for leaders around the world as they tended to be targets of assassination attempts. High-ranking officials and chiefs of state were getting picked off all the time. Many of these criminal acts were perpetrated by anarchists who saw their bombings and murders as the only way to achieve their ends. But other reasons, from simple politics to nationalism to even lunacy, came into play. During this period, for example, two U.S. presidents were killed, one by an anarchist and another by a man who was clearly off kilter, as were two prime ministers in Spain, and royalty and aristocracy and political leaders from around the world, especially Europe, were constantly the objects of violence. The most famous and far-reaching in terms of consequences would have to be the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo, which set off World War I. Now, Spanish royalty were not immune to this trend. Alfonso XII and Alfonso XIII were the two Spanish kings who reigned during this period. Alfonso XII's reign lasted from 1874 to 1885. And Alfonso XIII went from 1886, when he was born, until 1931. Though for the first 16 years of his life, his mother, Maria Cristina, acted as regent. Both men ruled Spain with a fair share of success and failures, and were both admired and detested. I'll be happy to delve into their lives at a later time because this period is really important to understanding why Spain is the way it is today. But today, I've decided to talk about and focus on how and when they were almost killed. So let me tell you a little bit more about that. Alfonso XII, as I said, was king from 1874 to 1885. He returned after the First Republic and he represented the restoration of the Bourbon monarchy in Spain. His reign was cut short by disease, but several years earlier, it could have been cut short by a bullet. And not just once, but twice. The first episode took place in 1878 when a man named Juan Moncasi took it upon himself to shoot the king. Moncasi was from a town called Cabra, which is in the province of Tarragona, which is in Catalonia, in the northeast of Spain. He was a cooper, but he also became associated with the rising workers' movements. And it was this influence, coupled with a lot of frustration, that apparently served as motivation for the attempted regicide. On October 25th, the king returned or was returning to Madrid from a trip to the provinces, and he was going down the Calle Mayor to his palace. The Calle Mayor is basically translated as Main Street, so a lot of towns in Spain will have their own Calle Mayor. I guess if you're British, you might call it the High Street. And anyway, it was on that street that his intended assassin awaited him. Once the carriage was close enough, he fired two shots, but somehow missed. Moncasi was arrested, tried, and put to death via the garrote, I'll do my American accent, garrote, which was a very Spanish instrument used for execution. Like many methods of execution, this one was used in theory as a humane way of executing a person. It was supposed to break your neck almost instantaneously, but in reality, many of the prisoners and the convicts who were put to death suffered tremendously. But it was Spain's main use of execution from about 1810, 1820, all the way up into the 1970s. In 1978, it was finally banned, though I believe the last time it was used was in 1959. In any event, that's what happened to Moncasi. He was executed in a place called the Campo de Guardias, which at the time was sort of north of the city. Now it's a part of the city and no longer there, and it was often used for that purpose. So that ended up being bad news for Monkasi, but good news for the king, at least for the moment. A little over a year later, another attack took place on December 30th, 1879, when Alfonso was driving a carriage, he himself, with his wife, Maria Cristina of Austria, back from the palace to, excuse me, back to the palace from the Retiro Park. Just as it is today, the Retiro Park is a popular place for people to get away from the city, and Alfonso often liked to visit it unescorted by guards, in other words, no bodyguards, and people could actually come up to him and say hello, or discuss matters with him, or give him some input. That's sort of one of the most positive parts of Alfonso. He was considered to be a king who was close to people, close to his subjects, and it made him quite popular. Anyway, the carriage was open, he was driving it, and in short, they were sitting ducks for anyone looking to do them harm. So they went back down the famous Calle Mayor we mentioned before, and they turned the corner and were arriving at the main gate of the palace. This is the one that you can actually still see today in the Plaza de Oriente. And a man named Francisco Otero, took out a pistol and fired two shots once again at almost point blank. Somehow he missed. Otero dropped the pistol and fled, but was caught and executed 6 months later. Now, at first, this had all the makings of an operation carried out by some possessed anarchist, which wouldn't have been all that surprising, as we know, since extreme ideology had inspired many individuals to resort to murderous acts. In this case, though, the perpetrator, Mr. Otero, appeared to have little to do with subversive organizations. At least that's the general feeling. Apparently, he was a baker or a pastry cook or a pastry cook. What do you call that? I think there's something else. I just can't think of it right now. Anyway, from Galicia, which is in the northwest of Spain, and he was down on his luck. He had come from a town called Mondoñedo, which is in the province of Lugo. Mondoñedo is a very old and historic town. It's very pretty, but it's also a bit secluded and up in the hills, and it can get pretty foggy and probably very depressing up there at times. That sort of climate can have an impact on people who live there. Anyway, the story goes that Otero headed for the capital, like so many other youths, in search of better opportunities. He was expecting to pick up work at a bakery owned by a relative of his. But that's what they say. Basically, so little was known about him that the papers resorted to making up a lot of stuff, which is a thing that they used to do quite often in the past. So it isn't always easy to find out the truth. But the most likely version is that things simply did not work out for him professionally or as a job. And I think his life started to fall apart and he became depressed, in fact, suicidal. And the problem was he couldn't muster up the courage to kill himself, which I'm sure is true of a lot of people. So what he did was fake an assassination attempt on the king so the guards would kill him. It's a pretty nutty way of getting the job done, but it's possible, and it certainly would explain how he could have missed when firing two shots on an open carriage less than 5 feet away. That and the fact that he didn't seem to belong to any known political organization. Anyway, that was his defense, and they brought in illustrious medical experts like José María Izquierdo, who has a street in Madrid, a big street named after him, and he performed all sorts of physical examinations of the physical features of his head. He measured and analyzed and conjectured, and basically said that that the accused was insane. Now, I guess it wasn't persuasive enough because he was found guilty and sentenced to death. But even Alfonso XII took pity on him and requested that his sentence be commuted to jail time. But the judge wasn't going to have anything of it, and he rejected it. So Otero met the same fate as his assassinating predecessor, but in a sense, he got his wish. So that was what happened to him. Alfonso XII would live attack-free for another 6 years before succumbing to a number of afflictions. Basically, most people think he died of tuberculosis, though some think it might have been typhus and even dysentery. His death, though, because he was only 28 and he was well-liked, came as a shock to both his young wife and the nation as a whole, except to the anarchists, who obviously didn't like any monarch. And you can see a famous statue of him in the Retiro Park where the lake is. There's a big statue dedicated to him. Now, to complicate matters a little bit, there wasn't an immediate male heir, which was always the preference in the Spanish monarchy. But Maria Cristina, his wife, was pregnant with a boy at the time, and so he was born after the death of Alfonso XII. So he was named the new king. As a newborn, he obviously couldn't take on the job, so his mother became regent until he was 16. So Alfonso became king officially, an acting king, in 1902. It wasn't an easy time for him, as just 4 years earlier, Spain lost its remaining overseas possessions of any consideration. We're talking about Cuba, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, and Guam, a result of the Spanish-American War. In any event, in 1906, he married Victoria Battenberg, who was English. She was Queen Victoria's granddaughter. Now, before the relationship was announced, there was a bit of a controversy because she was Protestant, she was Anglican, and would have to convert to Catholicism. And there was also a risk that she would be a carrier of hemophilia and that that would have an effect on future heirs, male heirs, because that's how hemophilia worked. The religion conversion was not an issue really too much because Anglicans and Catholics are pretty darn close, so she was willing to go there. And the hemophilia part was just a possibility, although it would turn out to be true. And two of their children, two of their sons, would be affected by that condition. In fact, it would lead to the death of one of their sons in Miami, Florida, of all places, in 1938, if I'm correct. So anyway, the wedding day came on a pretty May 31st. Now, leading up to that moment, a Catalan from Barcelona named Mateo Morral was preparing to kill the king and anyone else who happened to be nearby. Morral came from a wealthy textile family and even worked for his father for several years. But after a while, he shifted politically, and his political thinking went towards anarchy, which obviously clashed with probably what his father was thinking. And it led to a rift between him and dad. So what happened? His father gave him a departing monetary package of 10,000 pesetas and sent him on his way. He said, "Good luck, son." Now, Morral came into contact with Francisco Ferrer, who was one of the leading intellectuals, free-thinking intellectuals of his day. He was even well-known internationally. And he gave Morral a job at his library. And there, Morral fell in love with the educational director there, a woman by the name of Soledad Villafranca, who probably was involved in a relationship with Francisco Ferrer. Anyway, here we have a discrepancy about Morral's relationship with the woman. Some say he had an affair and then she rejected him, but others basically said she turned him down from the beginning. In either case, it seems that this became sort of a blow to Morral and influenced his decision to kill the king. If you've ever seen the movie Taxi Driver, or have or followed the life of David Hinckley, who was the man who tried to kill Ronald Reagan, I guess we're talking about something similar. Going to extremes, committing murder, magnicide, in order to impress a girl, which, as far as I know, never gets the desired result. Whatever his true motives were, the point is Morral arrived in Madrid on May 20th and spent the next 10 days putting his plan together. Now, if he was trying to be low-key about it or about his presence, he wasn't doing a very good job of it. He would hang around some of the most important intellectual roundtables of his day, many of whom remember him after the attack. He also apparently was seen etching a warning into a tree in the Retiro Park, of all places, vowing to execute the king. A newspaper article from the time, I think it was ABC, ABC newspaper, provided photographic proof of a tree with a menacing message. Whether Morral was the actual author is not clear, and I haven't been able to locate the tree in the park today. I don't think it's around anymore. So it was either removed, which is entirely possible because this was a long time ago, or possibly the story was made up. In any event, on May 31st, Alfonso and his bride emerged from the Jerónimos Church, which is right behind the Prado Museum. You can still go visit it. And the carriage paraded through the streets of Madrid as it went back to the Royal Palace. When it reached nearly the end of the Calle Mayor, there we are, for the third time, we're talking about the Calle Mayor, just a short distance from the palace, Morral dropped the bomb, literally. He was in a balcony at a pension on Calle Mayor 88 and was holding a bomb, the bomb as it was concealed in the bouquet of flowers. And now, as fortune or misfortune, depending on who you were, or fate would have it, the artifact struck a streetcar cable on the way down and bounced in a different direction. That caused the bomb to explode just far enough away for the royal couple to be spared the worst. Unfortunately, that translated into a very different story for many others. In the end, 24 people, although some say 25, were killed, mostly bystanders and royal guards, and over 100 were injured. And as an added grisly detail, it is said that Victoria's bridal dress was splattered with the blood of one of the horses that was killed. So that, along with the rest of the tragedy, must have made for what was just about as horrifying a wedding day memory as anyone could have. Morral managed to escape to the nearby neighborhood of Malasaña, where he was taken in by a local journalist, José Nakins. A couple of days later, Morral was recognized in the town of Torrejón de Ardoz, which is just outside of Madrid. He was trying to get a train back to Barcelona. Just exactly what happened next is one of debate, but the general version says that he shot a member of the police force and then subsequently shot himself. Now, the question is, did he shoot him immediately and shoot himself? Others say he was arrested. He gave himself up, but then a few minutes later, tried to escape, shooting the person and then shooting himself. It's sort of hard to say. But anyway, officially he killed himself. In the end, though, the important thing is that he was dead. But not wholly forgotten in an almost perverse twist of events that only Spain during the 1930s could have produced. For a few years there, the Calle Mayor, the one that we've been talking about throughout this podcast, which we know is one of the most famous and traditional in all of the capital, and the very street where this man had taken the life of 24 people, was actually named after him. It was called Calle Mateo Morral, in memory of his fight for, well, it's hard to say what. But anyway, after the Civil War, the name was switched back to Calle Mayor. Another notable fact about the Alfonso XIII assassination attempt is that if you look at the photograph that is posted in today's podcast, what you are seeing is probably the first picture ever of a terrorist attack in progress as it is happening. Notice the smoke in the background and the carriage sort of rushing off to safety. It's truly extraordinary. And there's even a video on YouTube. It's a very short one if you wish to check it out. Anyway, Alfonso XIII went on to reign for nearly 30 years, but he abdicated and died in Rome in 1942. There's plenty to talk about his life, but we'll save that for another time. Today, we just looked at a moment when his life was almost cut very short. But it is interesting to think, what might or might not have changed in the course of Spanish history, and we'll leave it there for speculation. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast. Please feel free to leave any comments or questions. We'd love to hear from you. Also, we are now on Patreon, so you are welcome to support this page if you'd like. It would be very much appreciated. All you have to do is click on the link and check out how you can become a member. It will allow you to get early access to my podcast and even exclusive access to all of my Spain Domain podcasts and information. So please take a look if you'd like. And that's it for today. Hope you are well. Stay safe and hasta pronto.